Welcome to the Living a Naturally Healthy Life podcast with Delaine ND, the podcast for people looking to correct chronic illnesses such as diabetes through lifestyle change. I'm Dr. Delaine Vaughn. As a physician, I see many patients who are ill because of lifestyle decisions such as food choices. Typically, diseases such as diabetes are managed with pills or injections. This approach creates a vicious, expensive, and unhealthy cycle of medication and then more medication to address the negative side effects. As a physician and a life coach, I work with clients to resolve their diseases, get off their medications, and live a naturally healthy life. If you don't like the healthcare system in America, I recommend you use less of it by being naturally healthy. So if you feel there has to be a better, more natural way to live a healthy life, you are in the right place. Hey, welcome back to the podcast. So today we're going to talk about filtering thoughts, but before we get started, I want to share a success story. My client Shonda just signed up for my six-month program. I've worked with her off and on. We've worked together in the past. She never really committed to herself, though, until recently. So she'd known some of the techniques that I teach for my clients to be successful in weight loss and also for reversing their type 2 diabetes. But when she committed to herself, she signed up for the program, she dropped 9 pounds in 1 week. She's not only had that amazing success, but she's also been working on keeping her word to herself. She's having tons of scale victories, but also tons of non-scale victories. She's learning how to manage her days in a way that serves her body, and she's learning the skill of how to reach her health goals. I know I frequently will share success stories about my clients. It's not only to show how transformative this work is, it truly is transformative, but it's also because of how inspiring my clients are. They motivate me, and I hope they motivate you too. So congrats to Shonda. She's on her way to many more victories, both on the scale and off the scale. I also want to remind folks about some changes that are going on. I mentioned this last podcast. I'm launching a six-month group diabetes program on January 1st of 2020. So if you are wanting to start a new year and your new decade off with learning how to become the healthiest non-diabetic version of yourself, this is the program for you to get in on. It will be a six-month program. Weekly coaching meetings will be held online in order to accommodate any location and all work schedules. If you're interested in learning more, go to www.delainemd.com/info, I-N as in Nancy, F as in Frank, O-sessions, S-E-S-S-I-O-N-S. So you can register there for an information session to learn all about the details of that group and also learn how to get signed up for it. Make 2020 the year that you lose the diagnosis of diabetes and become the naturally healthiest version of yourself. So today we are talking about filtering thoughts. This is a concept I've personally been working on. I certainly have struggled with overeating, and in the past, this has led to me eating off-plan foods. What this looks like is I am overeating food that's on plan food, that's healthy food. It's overeating nuts, overeating carrots, it's overeating eggs, it's overeating foods that are good. It's not always that I'm overeating Ho-Hos and Oreos, but it leads me to overeating off-plan foods, foods that do not serve my body. So here's the deal. I was able to reach my weight goals even with this half-managed approach to eating. My mind was not as well managed as it could have been. So this initially seems like a victory, right? But what I've realized is there's no security in reaching a goal this way. I did not master the art of allowing my primitive brain to pitch a fit without complying to its requests, without giving in to its requests. So what this means is that my primitive brain continues to pitch a fit. Right? Similar to the behavior of a toddler who's been thrown a candy bar every time it pitches a fit in the candy aisle learns to pitch a fit in the candy aisle when it wants a candy bar. My brain still does this sometimes. And I was able to reach my goal without having mastered this, right? But really, what I've learned is there's no security in this and that it still continues to come up. Learning to intentionally manage my primitive brain is part of the skill set for being at my goal weight, reaching my health goals in a permanent fashion. Again, I know it seems great. Everybody believes that life is going to be rainbows and daisies when they reach their health goals. So if you can reach your health goals and not have to learn the art of managing your primitive brain, that's like the win-win-win, right? But here's what the deal is. When you reach your health goals, the world is not rainbows and daisies. That's not the case. I hate to break it to you. Life is no different when you reach your goals. For diabetics, maybe we're sticking our fingers less. Maybe you're sticking your fingers 0 times a day. Maybe there's no insulin injections, and maybe your clothes fit better, and maybe you're smaller in size, but there are still going to be annoying bosses or coworkers or in-laws or whatever or whomever it is that annoys you. There will still be angsty teens or hormonal preteens in your home. There will still be bills to pay. There will still be disappointments and disagreements with loved ones. There will be bad drivers and rude people at the grocery store. None of these things change just because you've lost weight or your blood sugars are normal. These things will all continue to be there. When we don't learn to manage these thoughts in a way that does not involve allowing our primitive brain to wreak havoc and call all the shots in our life, we never learn the skill of allowing these negative experiences without buffering them away. We buffer away with things like overeating or overdrinking or overshopping. Pick your poison. If you never learn the skill of just allowing these things to occur without being on the verge of an overeat or some other overindulgence, you never learn to just allow those negative things to exist. The other feeling that I got with reaching my goal in this fashion was the feeling of cheating, quote unquote. I wasn't really putting the work in, but I was getting the results. It was kind of like if you ever did a group project in school and you had that overachiever in your group who really wanted to do the whole thing, and you let him do it, and why not? You still got the good grade, because let's be honest, most overachievers are typically really bright. They're going to get the good grade, but you did none of the work. And initially, you're like, yeah, that seems okay. Maybe there was a twinge of guilt associated with this, as maybe it didn't align with your core integrity of doing your part in a project like this, but you ran with it because it was typically the path of least resistance. But here's the problem. Whenever you were expected to know the lessons or the skills that were taught during that project by doing that project, you didn't know them. You hadn't learned them. And suddenly you were behind the eight ball. And this is how I felt when I reached my goals without learning the art of mastering my brain, my primitive brain. So one of my mentors teaches the process of developing a compelling reason for reaching your goals and how important it is to do this. And the process of teaching this concept, she talks about learning to filter your thoughts. This is what I've found so helpful recently. I think the process of developing a compelling reason is super important also, and maybe that's another podcast for another day. But today I want to discuss how important it is to intentionally decide on what thoughts you will use in your brain every day. So I'm going to give you an example that's non-food related, and then we'll go into some other maybe food related examples. So say your sister, whom you love dearly, you have always had a tight relationship, you've always considered her one of your closest friends, you've always had dreams of you being adults and hanging out every weekend together and going on family vacations together and having holiday dinners together. You love her and you want her in your life all the time. So say she brings home a serious boyfriend. And your initial thought of the serious boyfriend is he's borderline obnoxious. He's a little boisterous. He's loud. He says things that you find maybe chauvinistic. Your initial thought and impression regarding your sister's new boyfriend is not a good one. And you can see that. And when you look at this intentionally, your first question should be, how do I want to feel about this person? What feelings can I have about this person to support the relationship that I want to have with my sister and her possible husband? Now, if your relationship with your sister is one that's in the dump and you don't have a lot of value on that relationship, maybe thinking of her soon-to-be husband or soon-to-be spouse or possible spouse as a chauvinistic pig is fine. But if your dream was that your husband and you would play cards every weekend, have these great summer vacations together with your sister and her spouse, when you think he's a chauvinistic pig, you're setting those dreams up for failure, or at the very least, unpleasant weekends and unpleasant vacations. So intentionally deciding how you want to feel about him is the first question, right? Because your brain is going to seek to find evidence to support the thoughts that you have about him. The more you think a thought, the more your brain will provide that evidence. So if you spend the first 6 weeks that you know this person, your sister's new boyfriend, thinking he's a chauvinistic pig, you're going to have 6 weeks of evidence to support that thought. Versus intentionally, you knowing that you're hoping to have a long-term close relationship with this person, and then maybe thinking, yeah, sometimes he calls women broads, and I find that a little offensive, but he's also very observant of my sister's needs and always seems to be willing to get her whatever she needs to be comfortable, or whenever she needs something, he's willing to go out and find that for her. Whatever evidence that you can find of a thought that is serving your hopes and dreams for that relationship is going to help you have a better relationship with this boyfriend of your sister's, right? This is what I'm talking about when I talk about filtering your thoughts. So how does this look regarding our health? If you have a thought that you can't live without a certain food, you can't live without M&Ms and Diet Coke, that was mine. Maybe it's you can't live without bread at every meal. You're going to produce evidence to support that thought all the time. When that thought runs counter to your health, of course it makes it very difficult to live a naturally healthy life. Everyone wants to tell me it's not the thoughts, it's the ho-hos. The ho-hos are the problem. Yes, the ho-hos are a problem. But figuring out the thoughts that you keep telling yourself to justify eating the ho-hos is how you stop eating the ho-hos. It's not by removing all the ho-hos from the face of the earth. Because if you don't learn to manage those thoughts without eating something to make them seem less unpleasant, you can remove all the ho-hos from your life. Something else is going to show up. For me, I told myself I couldn't imagine living without Diet Coke and M&Ms. Life wouldn't be worth living. These are real thoughts that I had. I can remember telling myself, I'm not seeing people die of Diet Coke-related illnesses, and until I do, I'm not stopping eating them. I didn't realize the connection that Diet Coke had with all of these other cravings, this over-focus, over-desire to eating these other foods that were really negatively impacting my health. This, of course, made it very difficult to lose weight, to manage my hunger and cravings, and to live a naturally healthy life. Just because I stopped eating them didn't teach me how to manage my desires without overeating and overindulging. That's when I started to overeat and overindulge on nuts or cheese or eggs. And occasionally, I would still have a bad day where I would turn to things like candy. Not on plan, not an intentional way of eating those foods. I would eat it to a point I felt sick. And I also felt out of control and disappointed in myself. This didn't happen all the time, but it certainly happened enough to know that I was cheating the system. If you have diabetes and you're telling yourself I could never live my life without burgers or fries or pizza or bread or sodas, you're setting yourself up for a life of diabetes. You're setting yourself up to be a diabetic for the rest of your life. Another thought, every meal is supposed to have a protein, a veggie, a starch, and a dessert. If that's your thought, you're setting yourself up for a diabetic life. So my question is, why are we continuing to eat the foods that make us sick? Either eat the foods that make us sick with obesity or eat the foods that make us sick with diabetes. Whatever that looks like for you, why are you continuing to have thoughts that serve this pattern? So the process for working through these thoughts is to look at your goal that you want. You look at your goal and then you look at the competing desires that you have for this goal. So you have a goal, that's one desire, but you will also have competing desires. The topic of competing desires is another podcast for another day also, but recognize that everybody has these, right? If your goal is to save up a down payment for a home, you want to purchase a home and you want to save that down payment, almost always people have competing desire to overspend. Whether that be on a shopping spree or an expensive vacation, whatever it is, we all have this competing desire that goes against that goal. I have a goal to save for a home. I also have the desire to overshop. Or this is another one. This happens to me sometimes. Maybe your kid's sick in the middle of the night, 2 a.m., you wake up, you hear them coughing, they've got a cold or they're nauseated or whatever it is. Maybe they need some medicine. You have the desire to keep sleeping and you also have a desire to take care of your child. Those two desires are competing desires. So in health, you might have a desire to lose weight or you might have a desire to have normal blood sugars, but you also have a competing desire for burgers, fries, pizza, breads, or sodas. Recognizing and looking for your competing desires is the second step, right? And then you recognize that you have these competing desires and that they're going to be there, but you're making a decision to commit to your goal. You make a decision to commit to your health. And then the last step is that you filter the thoughts about the competing desires and you replace them with thoughts that are pushing you towards your goal. So some people think this is Pollyanna thinking, but it's not. It's committing to a goal and actively focusing on the thoughts that serve those goals. Thoughts that you've already had, but deciding to focus on those thoughts instead of on the thoughts that are driving you to overeat or eat in a way that doesn't serve your body. So these competing desires, the desire, I want to lose weight and I want to eat M&Ms, come from separate parts of your brains, right? But all of these are thoughts. Your desires are all thoughts, but they come from two parts of your brain. The health desire or thoughts come from that prefrontal cortex, or what we call the neocortex of your brain. It's a newer part of our brain, newer evolutionarily, but it's the part of our brain that can weigh pros and cons of the choices we're making and compare it to our health goals. So the desire or thoughts about M&Ms, they're pure primitive brain work, right? This is our older part of our brain that's ran on instincts and rewards, right? There's no essential M&M requirement for the human body, but they sure do taste good, and our primitive brain really likes them. In fact, it will pitch quite a fit if you try to take the M&Ms away, or the Ho-Hos, or the pizza, or the fried chicken, whatever it might be. Your brain's going to pitch a big fit when you try to stop eating those. When your food decisions have been made by your primitive brain for so long, which is likely what gets us overweight or leads to health issues like diabetes, the thought chatter about these foods is a very difficult thing to quiet. And this is where learning to be aware of those thoughts and then filter the thoughts that serve your goals is so helpful. So, what does this look like for me? This was recognizing that I really like to feel full. I like to feel too full. I like to feel more full than my body really needs. For a long time, because I was getting full on foods that were healthy, like eggs or veggies or nuts, I did not focus on the fact that I was still eating more than I needed and still eating from that primitive brain. I'd also managed to work the system to where I could reach my goal and still let my primitive brain run the show. As soon as any component of when I ate or when I weighed was off schedule, it became very obvious that I had not, in fact, achieved my goal. I would eat at a different time of day, or maybe I would need to weigh at a different time of day because I got up earlier or got up later, and my scale was not at goal then. And frequently, it was much higher, as much as 6 or 8 pounds higher. I had not learned how to eat in a way that served my body's needs. I had learned how to eat in a way that kept my primitive brain appeased and quiet. So my first step was recognizing that I wanted to feel more full than my body needs. It was being aware of that. The second step was to realize that my brain, my primitive brain, will tell me, it's okay. Go ahead and eat that. Keep on eating. It's healthy food. You don't want to be hungry later. You only get to eat this amount. It might not be enough. You're not eating bad foods. It's fine. These were the different thoughts that my primitive brain would offer me. So what I've realized is my third step. So the first step is to recognize that I really like to overeat. The second step is to see where my primitive brain offers that it's okay to do this. The third step was to try on a new thought. So my new thought is, this is when my brain offers me a bunch of reasons why I should overeat, but I'm not doing that today. I'm trying something new. I'm not going to starve. No one's going to die. And overeating in any form doesn't serve my body. These are the set of thoughts that I run through when I'm looking at this, when my brain is offering me to overeat. And then my last step, my fourth step, I take a deep breath. I reconnect to my goal. That gives me a feeling of determination, and I keep to my plan. And I don't overeat. And I allow my body to feel the way it's going to feel when it's not totally stuffed. So I want you to give this a try. I want you to see how it works for you. This is the kind of stuff that my client Shonda is doing to get her results. This is the kind of stuff I'll be teaching in my 6-month diabetes program that's going to be starting in January. Remember, if you're interested, go to www.delanemd.com/info-sessions to register for that informational session and hear all about that group. And if you're interested in private coaching with me, set up a consult by emailing delane@delanemd.com. We'll set up a time for a consult. That's all I have for you today. I hope you found this helpful, and I hope you have a great week, and I'll talk to you later. Bye. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and share with your friends and family. Also, leave me a review. If you want to resolve your diabetes naturally without any pills or injections, I can help you. Visit DelaneMD.com for more information. Click on the Work With Me tab, send me a message, and we can set up a mini coaching session. You guys have a great week. I'll talk to you soon.